As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I love the Raiders. Most of all, I love to win.
You're now listening to State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, and Tashawn Reed on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, Tashawn Reed. And we're all gathering here to blame Vic. That's just what we're about today. We're about to blame Vic. The guy last week put it in the universe that the Raiders should get rid of Rodney Hudson. What did the Raiders do this week? They got rid of Rodney Hudson. They were going to cut him. They agreed to a deal to cut him, and they trade him to the Cardinals, all because Vic put it in the universe.
The most obvious one is Rodney Hudson. I know Rodney Hudson's great, and everyone, I'm not saying he's not a great player, but I think of all the young players in their team who they feel the most comfortable in as far as confident they can step in and do a good job. I think Andre James, you're very high on Andre James, which I think it makes it weird that they spend all this money on a center, and they have one who's dirt cheap who they think it can do the job as well. So I know not the same level as Rodney Hudson, but to me, that'd be a much more obvious move to make if you're trying to trim your offensive line salary cap assignment.
Vic, defend yourself. Why did you get rid of Rodney Hudson?
I appreciate both of you guys putting out there on Twitter when it happened. No, I'll blame Vic. I'm like, thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
I mean, that's my immediate reaction.
I don't know, man. I think, read the tea leaves, I think, and people think I was nuts, but Andre James, they're really high on the kids. So I think you look at Rodney Hudson's deal, and he wasn't happy. He was definitely getting frustrated. One winning season in six here. I think, the way the talks have gone with, Trent Brown and Gabe Jackson, there's some bad feelings among the O-line. So he was looking for a change. And John, normally, maybe a couple of years ago, would definitely have fought it because he said many times he loves Rodney Hudson, the way he plays, the way he studies the game, and what he does for an offense. But, Rodney's 32. Like, they want to, get the streamline, kind of make the offensive line a little more efficient, a little cheaper, and spend some money elsewhere. So they're like, cool, let's do it. And then they're going to cut him. They had agreed, both sides had agreed on, my days are mixed up. Was this Tuesday? Both sides agreed to cut him. And then the Cardinals were smart, and they jumped in. Wait. We could use a center, and we'll give you like a pick for him if you don't cut him. And so fortunately for Rodney, I think he's happy. He's okay with Arizona. It would have sucked for him if he thought he was going to be able to choose his place where he wanted to go and then got traded somewhere bad. But Arizona's an attractive team, good location, so I think he's all right.
I mean, in terms of the salary cap and how this affects the Raiders, obviously the Raiders still get about a $12 million cap hit. The way these deals work, yes, Arizona takes over his contract, but any bonuses, signing bonuses, that kind of stuff, restructure bonus, those get spread out over the length of the contract. So that's why the Raiders still have a dead cap hit. But 2022, when I guess maybe we're building toward 2022 now, I don't know, but obviously it clears up the cap space for 2022 when presumably with the new NFL TV contract and as fans back in the stands, hopefully the salary cap will go up. So, hey, get ready for 2022, right?
Yeah, I think that was my biggest takeaway from this trade is, well, I'm sure they still want to win this season. It seems like they're pushing their chips to the table in 2022 and trying to focus on making a push for it or really go for it in that year. You look at the other signings that they've made so far in free agency, it's a lot of one-year deals, two-year deals with like guarantees for the second year outside of Yannick. We'll talk about that later. But it really seems like they're kind of loading up for next year. That's probably when they have to make the decision about Derek Carr, his long-term futures and which way they're going to go. And so obviously they won't say that they're bailing on this season upcoming, but the way it's looking, like if you just look at the roster today compared to where it was going into last season, obviously they can still make some more moves, but I think they might have taken a step back overall as a team. And so maybe they're okay with that if it means setting themselves up for bigger things in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, and you start looking at 2022 costs. You mentioned the decision on Derek Carr. What do they do there? Do they extend him at that point? There's also an upcoming cost on the offensive line, Colton Miller. I mean, I don't think he's going to get Trent Williams top of the market money, but he's going to get over 15, 18, I don't know, whatever. But we'll see what the market's like by then. But he's going to get a pretty big contract extension just as a guy that I think they view as a franchise left tackle. If he can make the next step and be a Pro Bowler next season, that would help out his market. Sure, they would have the option of a fifth year option for next season, but that is a future cost there. But yeah, I mean, it does feel like, I mean, obviously the offensive line is going to be cheaper with, you know, guys like Andre James. They brought back Richie Incognito on a cheap deal. Gabe Jackson gets traded to Seattle after he did not want to restructure, and we'll figure out what they do at right tackle. They still don't have one.
You know, they also pushed some money into defensive line. They made a bunch of defensive line signings too. So I do think that, you know, you guys are right. They are pushing the chips towards 2022. But at the same time, I think one of the things that they really wanted to do this offseason was to invest more into the defensive line. That's one of the first things Gus Bradley mentioned when he was hired. So they got Inakwe, who is a, you know, pure pass rusher type. And they got some D tackles, no stars, but guys that can contribute and add to the defensive line depth and give you some pass rush juice. So, you know, I think the Solomon Thomas signing was interesting. I think, you know, he's purely an inside guy. I just don't think he could play an edge, but he, you know, he's been through some things. He went through a family tragedy. He was injured last season. So I think if he focuses just inside, you know, there's some upside there. So I think the defensive line is better. The offensive line, I mean, if they draft a right tackle, is it going to be that much worse than it was last year with all the injuries that they went through, and they still were able to perform with all those offensive line injuries?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, at this point, it seems pretty cool. I mean, I guess they could go try to free up some money to get somebody like Mitchell Schwartz, but past him, it's really just guys that are best suited as swing tackles left in free agency. So they almost have to draft a right tackle, and you would think that would be done with that 17th overall pick. Or, I mean, with this, you know, additional compensation they got for Rodney Hudson, they have an extra third rounder, and then Gabe Jackson trade, they got an extra fifth rounder. So if they want to try to swing a trade with some of those extra picks and move up higher in the first round to get a guy that they really like, you know, if they fear he's going to be off the board, they could do that as well. But yeah, it's looking like as far as right tackle goes, they're going to have to draft one.
Yeah, I think they'll have their pick of right tackles at 17 too. You know, the two top tackles, the two left tackles, Anthony Slater and Sewell, those guys are going to go way before the Raiders pick. But I think they'll have
Anthony Slater, pick. Man. They're drafting Anthony Slater, man. That's they can't steal him off the Warriors beat from us.
Oh, what's his first name? You know, Slater from Rashawn. Northwestern. Yeah, Rashawn Slater. Not our guy. He's too small. Yeah, I think they could draft a really good right tackle, and they wouldn't be reaching because I think there are some tackles that should be going around the range the Raiders pick. But, I mean, there's always a possibility that Raiders just end up picking like a right tackle nobody's ever heard of in the first round, too. But I think they'll have some good choices there.
Yeah, Slater might go a little bit higher. So, but Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State, he's another guy that started at right tackle in college that – he's a little bit bigger too. I think Slater, there's some concerns whether he's more of a guard at the next level, but I think Jenkins is more prototypical tackle. So if he ends up falling there, that'd also be a good pick, I think.
Yeah, Slater's not really a Raider offensive line. He doesn't fit that mold. I like Jenkins better.
I was going to add, I think the worst case scenario isn't that bad. I think Denzel Good's shown he can play right tackle if you need be. If you have Simpson go at guard with Richie, and you can have Denzel start at right tackle until maybe if you wanted to pick a tackle on second or third round, that guy wasn't ready opening day, I think Denzel would be fine for a while at right tackle.
Yeah, I think he'd be fine there, but my issue would be that interior. Andre James, his first year really starting, and then John Simpson, you know, he had a couple spot starts last year, but he'll also be first year starting at right guard. Incognito's 38. What if he gets hurt again? So that interior would be really, I don't know. I think I want at least to sign another veteran tackle as like an insurance policy.
Right.
So that, you know, if they need good on the inside, he can go back there.
Yep.
If we trust the Raiders scouting, then Andre James should be at least good if we trust what they believe.
Yeah, we have plenty of reason to do that.
Yeah, it's just trust Tom Cable, not the scouting. It's all that's Cable's guy, and he's the guy who's
Cable.
He's done a good job over the years, like Deshaun mentioned, when they had to, you know, guys had to fill in and had some injuries. The guys have stepped up and played pretty well, so I think Tom's done a good job. So obviously they have confidence he can get this group ready by opening day.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have confidence, really anybody with the Raiders right now, it's in Tom Cable. But Vic, let's talk a little bit about Gabe Jackson. Gets dealt for a fifth round pick. Obviously, the word came out, I think last week, whatever it was, that they were going to cut him. They held on to him, and they've got this big offseason strategy that they're really applying with several players, and he was one of them. Trent Brown was one of them before he got traded, where they're guys that they don't want to pay what they were set to pay them, and so their plan was we're going to get rid of this guy, but we actually kind of would like to keep him if we can get him at a better price. For Gabe, he was due 9.6. They wanted him to play at 5, and they weren't going to cut him until he agreed to a restructure, or maybe it got just too late and all the money is gone in free agency and training camp rolls around and he's not going to come and whatnot. And then they'd cut him. They end up finding a deal. They get a fifth rounder. You wrote that it's not great value for a 7-year starter, but at least it's better than nothing. What went wrong with the whole Gabe Jackson thing, and why is he now gone too?
Well, I think it's an interesting strategy. They've pretty much told these guys, and Trent, Gabe, and to some extent Mariota, like, you know what, we overpaid you. We gave you way too much money. So how about now you give us a little bit back and come back for us? We love you. We still love you. We want you back. You know, always Raider, yada yada yada. But we need you at a little less money. So how about that? And then these players, like, you know, if you're Gabe Jackson, you're like, man, I'm gonna take a $4.6 million pay cut when I like played hurt all of 2019. I mean, that's not something they want. Plus, like he's shown, he has value. I mean, obviously, even with his contract, Seattle wanted to trade for him, so he knows his value. So I think he wasn't gonna do it. And their plan was pretty much, you know, to kind of force his hand and hold on to him until either he restructured or they cut him at camp. Like, Trent Brown, they're going to keep him till camp and cut him then, and when the market was dry. So this whole thing kind of snowballed pretty quickly. Rodney Hudson wanted to go, so they found a trade partner for Rodney Hudson, and Gabe Jackson was the same kind of deal. So they were able to get draft picks for guys that weren't going to be back. So I guess that's the silver lining.
But why did they tell him that they were going to release him? Like, why didn't the idea of trading them come up sooner? Because I felt like that might have hurt their value a little bit.
Again, they thought these guys would want to restructure. They thought Gabe Jackson, maybe. He's been here 7 years. You know, he and Derek Carr get along good. He's got friends in the O-line. He got some ties here. Maybe he'd want to come back and have a chance to win with this group. But I think the pay cut was too severe. I think, I just think that they were kind of in a weird place. Like Jimmy said, they like these guys. They paid for them a lot of money, so they obviously like them, but not at this current value. They wanted to bring them back at less. So it got, and they thought it got kind of ugly. I mean, I think they probably thought it would be a little smoother than it was. It wouldn't be like, you know, so hostile, but obviously Gabe Jackson right away when they put it out there, the offer to restructure, his agent came back, you know what, he's going to be cut. He's done. So that kind of leaked out around the league, like Gabe Jackson's going to be cut. So they never considered a restructure for even a second. So I think that may have surprised the Raiders a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that the Raiders like expected guys like Trent Brown, Gabe Hudson to take these pay cuts. I mean, typically when you see that happen, it's more so guys that like may not have, obviously Trent Brown was different because he'd been injured, but for Hudson and Jackson, you know, you typically try that approach with guys that hadn't been good the year before. And, you know, they might be afraid they can't go get that money elsewhere or land with another team or might be out of the league. Or if you know a team that's won recently, like the Chiefs or the Patriots or somebody like that, and, you know, you want somebody to stay a part of the winning culture and take less money to come back and stay a part of that. But, you know, when you're a team that's been losing or around 500 and, you know, these guys, especially Hudson, you know, if he hit the market, he would have been swooped up immediately or almost immediately. Like, I don't know. I just don't know why they thought that guys would take less money. I could see Trent Brown out of the three, but the other two is just kind of strange to me.
I think the one thing they were thinking was that, you know, this year is so weird because of the salary cap being reduced. If you can convince these guys to come back in for 1 year, have a big year, hit the market next year when the market, you know, the salary cap is going to be huge next year because of the TV deal, this is kind of a prove it for them for around the league. Like, you know what, come back, play here, we win, yada, yada, yada. But if you don't want to stay here next year, you'll have big time value on the market. You played well, you'll have big time value on the market next year, especially with Trent. Trent Brown, they figured he had no other options. His deal was so big and he was hurt last year, the COVID stuff, there's whispers about his, you know, conditioning, his commitment. So that's a guy who's going to want him at that contract. But, you know, I think Trent may have known this, that the Patriots know him pretty well. They know all his baggage. They know he's really good when motivated. So they jumped at the chance to trade for him. If not them, then they probably still have Trent Brown right now. But his former team stepped up, and he's obviously thrilled to be back there.
So
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I'm wondering, how will this play in the locker room? How will this play within the culture of this team? I mean, the rest of this roster knows what happened with these guys, know how they were approached by this team. And, you know, they're going to learn about that. This was the approach these guys were going to take, where, hey, we're going to keep this guy around until training camp and then we'll ditch him. I mean, are we worried about how this is going to affect the culture of the team? I mean, there got to be players on this team that are sitting there looking at their contract wondering, man, are they going to play that game with me next year?
Yeah, I do think there are some human elements to this that kind of get overlooked in the business of football. You know, I haven't been around a team as long as someone like Vic, but get rid of guys like Hudson and Jackson that, you know, I'm sure are beloved throughout the locker room and it become a part of that team culture. And you just, you know, especially when they're both, like I said, I think they both started all 16 games last season. They both played at a pretty high level. And you ask those guys to take pay cuts or ship them out if they don't, like that's, you know, and then we see how the Derek Carr situation is. He's basically on a year-to-year type situation. So, I mean, they don't really have any established building blocks of the team that have any sort of certainty moving forward into the future. And that's got to, you would think that would reverberate throughout the roster.
I agree. I think it's definitely worrisome, you know, as far as locker room morale, especially when you lose a guy like Hudson the way you did. So we'll see what happens. But, and, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen in a locker room, but I can't, you know, imagine a world where it doesn't affect the guys in the locker room and what they think about this team and their future moving forward.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think players know it's a business. And I think if, say, a player had a problem with it and they approached Mike Mayock or John about it, I think they would say, look, we're trying to win. And this, we had these assets. We're trying to figure out the best way we can use these assets. And that was what we came up with. So we're trying to, you know, everything we do is trying to win games. So, and another thing, I think there's such a turnover in this locker room every year. Like, so many new players come in every year that maybe a lot of guys don't know the history. They don't know what happened 2 years I don't know, like Gabe Jackson was here 7 years. They have no idea. Like, oh, Gabe Jackson? Uh-huh. So I just think that, you know, it's a whole new culture every year with this team because they bring in so many new guys. I think, you know, there's only what now? There's only, with Eric Harris leaving today for Atlanta, there's only three guys left from 2018. Derek Carr, Nicholas Morrow's back, and Jalen Richard. So that's a pretty amazing turnover in 3 years.
All right, well, that's a perfect transition for us to get into their free agent additions. And it kicked off on Monday. We were all grumbling about, hey, it's a slow start, first couple hours. And then the Raiders signed Yannick Ngakoue, agreed to the deal with Yannick Ngakoue. A two-year, $26 million deal, I believe fully guaranteed. Looks like it's going to be kind of an even cap hit, I think, of $13 million each year. He's a guy that has never had fewer than 8 sacks in a season. Last year, he played for 2 different teams. He was with Minnesota and Baltimore, had a combined total of 8 sacks. I mean, you look at his whole career. I mean, 8 sacks as a rookie, 12 sacks and a Pro Bowl the second year, 9.5 in 2018, 8 in 2019. So, I mean, he's not, you know, elite, top of the market edge rusher in terms of a guy that is every year double digit sacks. But for this Raiders team, a guy that can get 8 to 10 sacks is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, he's a little one dimensional. Like, he's not really good against the run, but he provides exactly what the Raiders need. He's one of the best pure pass rushers in the league. Brandon Thorne does a thing called the sack score, and he, you know, you get rewarded for high quality sacks against, you know, one-on-one against a quality tackle rather than just cleanup sacks. And he's up there with some of the best pass rushers in NFL. So I thought his contract was pretty fair too. I mean, after seeing what Leonard Floyd is making with the Rams and some other pass rushers, I think he came in at a pretty fair price. So I think it's a good fit for the Raiders.
Yeah, he's not a top of the market edge rusher, but they didn't pay him like one. And I think that's the most important piece of this, given, you know, some of the contracts that they've handed out in recent years that haven't worked out. I mean, it's only a 2-year deal, $13 million a year. It's fully guaranteed. But, you know, as we've said throughout this podcast, you know, the cap is expected to surge, you know, next year, and they've made some moves to free up space. So it shouldn't be as big of a deal when it comes to their plans for that year. And, you know, if it works out and he plays the way he did, you know, when he was at his best in Jacksonville, when Gus Bradley was the coach, then, you know, maybe they move forward with another deal, you know, moving forward. And so I think it's a pretty good move. You know, it may not, you know, change their life on the defensive side of the ball. You know, the defensive line, I still think, you know, is better than last year with some of the other moves that they made. But it's still a work in progress for sure. And it kind of depends on, you know, if he can return to his old self, and, you know, whether those young guys they have like Cleveland Ferrell and Max Crosby can continue to develop in year 3.
Yeah, I thought it was a good signing. I thought, like these guys mentioned, I thought it was a fair price. I think he definitely has a really good skill. He definitely gets after the quarterback. I think he fits in well as far as you mentioned. Please play better against the run than against the pass. So, and then Max is played hurt last year, but he's shown he can do both. So I think that's a pretty good mix there. I think obviously you probably want another guy. I'm not sure if Arden Key's the fourth end or if they bring somebody else in, but I think definitely the pass rush was the biggest need, and now you also you avoid having to rely on finding a guy in the draft. The draft, you know, it's tough to find young guys in the draft. This year wasn't a great class, or some guys who I liked, but at 17, it was like, I'm not sure I'll be able to come in right away and make a huge impact. So I think you answer that problem. Now you can focus on other areas in the draft.
You know, the other thing I like about Ngakoue is kind of when you look at his career line, he's played 16, 16, 16, 15, 15. He's been, you know, he's only missed 2 games, and last year he played 15. I don't know if the trade maybe is a part of why he didn't play in one game. I'm not sure what the one game he missed was last year, but you know, so he's durable. He's been durable at least through the first 5 years of his career, and 18 career forced fumbles. He had a career high 6 back in 17, so he had 4 last year. You know, that's a big way to impact the game. I mean, if you have 8 sacks, but 4 of them are strip sacks that, you know, lead to turnovers, I mean, that can be huge. And the Raiders, we know, have struggled to force turnovers in recent years. And so getting a guy that can maybe be a turnover machine would be helpful.
Yeah, I don't think it's a red flag. It's a small thing. Maybe it's a pink flag. Is that he was on 4 teams in 7 months. And I'm not thinking, I think something off the field as far as why that happened. But to me, that's a little concerning, because you got to figure none of those teams want to keep him. None of those teams liked him enough to, like, this is our guy, let's keep him here. So to me, I understand it's contract based and things happen, but that's a lot of teams in 7 months.
Just say it, Vic. You want to say his bum was a little warm in this place.
Yeah, that may have been the dumb things I've said in the show. That might be the dumbest thing I've said. I can't shake
and
that.
And it's lingered.
It has lingered, yeah. The image of Paul Gunther's warm bum has lingered over this podcast for a year now.
Oh. All right, let's talk about the other guys they brought in. They needed help at wide receiver after losing Nelson Agholor to the Patriots. What did he get? I think $13 million a year, up to $13 million a year, but I think $11 million is kind of the base there, which was, I mean, I think we'd all agree that that was probably a salary that the Raiders were smart not to pay. But they bring in John Brown, former Bills and Cardinals receiver, speedster, a guy who was hurt last year and missed some time, but has 2,000-yard seasons under his belt. I mean, I think he's a good fit. They got him at a much better price than Aguilar. And I think that was a good signing for the Raiders.
Yeah, I like it. I think he's, before he got hurt last season, he probably was a better player than Aguilar so far throughout his career. And, you know, he's kind of, you know, similar in style, I guess, to Henry Ruggs. You know, both 5'11", speed guys. But I think he's obviously, you know, a more complete receiver at this stage in his career and can do some other things. So I don't know how much they want to line him up at traditional X. I still think, you know, Bryan Edwards might be technically the starting receiver there. But, you know, I think he can kind of take on that role that they initially planned for Aguilar last year, kind of being that rotational receiver that can come in either for Edwards or Ruggs if needed in certain packages and kind of be more of a complimentary guy than being you know, an every down starting receiver for him.
Yeah, I was a little surprised with the John Brown signing because, like you said, his skill set is a little repetitive when it comes to Ruggs' skill set, but he is a more complete receiver at this point of his career, and I think he's pretty good Nelly replacement as far as his ability to get deep and his production, and to get him at that price is a pretty good signing. But, you know, I thought they would go after a guy that does fit that X mold a little bit more, that could be a little more physical in case Bryan Edwards doesn't work out or, you know, he gets hurt again. But I guess they're okay with Waller just being that guy that could win in the short area of the field and the intermediate area of the field and get those first downs.
Brown counts as part of the leadership fund. He's going to be the guy that's going to groom Ruggs because they've got to have somebody to show Ruggs the ropes, right, Vic?
Yeah, I remember way back in the day, I remember reading about John Brown is in Arizona as a rookie. He would babysit Carson Palmer's kids. So obviously he definitely has some experience watching young people.
Oh, wow.
How about that? Yeah, it's a good trivia. Huh? Only on this podcast, get that kind of stuff. But yeah, as far as the X stuff you guys mentioned, I think to me it may show that the Raiders are probably higher on Edwards than they are on Ruggs. I think they probably have less doubts about Edwards being able to have a big year. I think there's probably a little bit of concern still about Henry. I think also that before they signed John Brown, they were in on Marvin Jones. Yeah, there was some thought before this free agency they might just go with the guys they had last year, bring another young guy or bring another guy to kind of, you know, back up these guys. But I mean, Marvin Jones and John Brown are going to play, either one are going to play a lot. So to me, it shows that they may not be totally happy or excited about where the young guys are as far as being positive they can be top flight guys in the NFL.
That's not good.
Yeah, I mean, Edwards, you know, he was hurt most of last year. I know, obviously, he got caught up in his training camp buzz, but he really didn't do much last season out of catching the touchdown came against the Broncos and then the final game of the season, I believe that was. So he's mostly potential at this point. I think, you know, Ruggs, he didn't have a great rookie year, but he showed enough for them to be more favorable, have a more favorable view of him than Edwards, I would think. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to between the two roles that, you know, John Brown could potentially fill on the outside, he would be a better fit for the stuff that Ruggs does more so than, you know, what they'd be asking out of Edwards. But I think Ted made a good point of, you know, Darren Waller is basically their number one X receiver anyway. And, you know, last year, I believe they were dead last in wide receiver targets in the league. So they don't throw a ton to their receivers. Along with that, probably because they line up Waller so much at the X. And we'll probably see Foster Moreau get some more time this year as well in the passing game. And so, maybe they feel like it's just not that important of a position in their offense.
I also going to say, I think Zay Jones coming back is kind of a big deal. Like, they like Zay Jones a lot as far as an insurance guy. I know he wanted to pay. I haven't seen his contract, what he got, but I know he wanted to pay raise. So I'm curious what he got. But they think he's, you know, a legit number two, number three guy in terms of, you know, the NFL, a guy who can definitely come in and make plays. I know Derek Carr is very comfortable with him. And the coaching staff likes his experience and his savvy. So I think that's also a big deal. I know people look at that. I tweeted yesterday how they were setting out a receiver and people lost their minds because it's not a really impressive list, but it's not a bad list. I think you mentioned Waller. You have Waller on the side of it, looking at Brown, you know, Ruggs, Edwards, Renfro, and Zay Jones. I think that's pretty good.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV.
Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's talk about their other defensive line additions. Quentin Jefferson, Solomon Thomas. Thomas, the former number three overall pick to the 49ers, who obviously disappointing career with the Niners, and he's coming off a torn ACL. And then Quentin Jefferson giving them an interior pass rusher. I mean, Thomas is a guy that is a tweener, always has been a tweener. The Niners drafted him as a defensive end. He really excelled more at Stanford as an interior pass rusher, and the Niners did find time kind of over his tenure there to use him more on the inside. He's probably a rotational guy, but we figure, I mean, Jefferson probably should slot in there next to Jonathan Hankins as one of the starting tackles.
Yeah, he seems like he could be a starter, but I think, you know, I think there would be a legit competition for that that one tech, three tech spot. Hankins would probably play one tech. But yeah, I thought Hurst was playing well before he was hurt, and, you know, his play fell off a cliff after he got hurt and came back. Irving was probably going to be in that mix too. So, you know, I think there'll be some competition for that three tech spot, but Jefferson probably is going to be in the lead just because of his experience in Bradley's system.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident saying Jefferson will be the starter. And you would think those three kind of competing for the backup spot there. Obviously, they need a backup behind Hankins as well. He's not going to play every snap, but, you know, between Hurst, Irvin, and Thomas, you know, one of those guys may not make the final roster, you would think. You know, I don't know if you necessarily need to carry. And, you know, they also brought back Kendall Vickers. You know, he's in that mix as well. You definitely don't need six defensive tackles probably. So, you know, I'm sure those guys will be competing for roster spots.
All the signings so far, the one I like the least, Solomon Thomas. I like that one. I think, to me, the only reason they pretty much, I haven't seen the contract. They say it's up to $5 million, so we'll see how much of that was incentives. But to me, the only reason they pick him is because he's a former first-round pick. They love former first-round picks, but here's a guy who didn't do anything with the Niners. He's the best defensive coordinator in the league and never, to me, showed anything at all. So, I mean, I know he was hurt. I know he's a great guy, but we'll see. I mean, but to me, it's just a really, it's an old-style Raiders signing where it's not based on any recent film.
All right, as for the guys that the Raiders brought back, you know, we talked a little bit about the offensive line. Obviously, they brought back Denzel Good. They brought back Richie Incognito. You know, you already mentioned Zay Jones. Nicholas Morrow comes back at linebacker. I mean, we know their defense wasn't great. Their linebacking core was, you know, not great, but they're basically running it back with Kwiatkowski, Littleton, and Morrow as Morrow comes back on a one-year deal.
I wasn't aware of it beforehand, but I read Morrow is from St. Louis, so he's my favorite player on the roster now. But no, I think that's solid value for him. You know, he was probably their best linebacker last season when you consider how often Kwiatkowski was hurt early in the season and how bad Littleton played. And you know, Gus Bradley doesn't use a ton of three linebacker sets, but that, you know, they still play a 4-3 base. And so, you know, obviously he'll be the third starter when they go to that look. And also, you know, providing some depth behind Littleton at that outside linebacker spot. Even middle linebacker, I think you can play some there as well. I think they may need one more because I think Tanner Muse, you know, just going to be a special team player. So they probably need
special
one more.
Special team war daddy.
Yeah. So then, you know, whether it's through the, you know, maybe a mid round guy in the draft, Devin White, maybe him, you know, but I think they need one more guy. But I think Moreau is a nice keep as that third starter.
I was surprised at the contract. It was at $4.5 million for 1 year. To me, obviously, yeah, he wants to get back to the market next year, which is fair. But if that's the case, I wouldn't have given him $4.5 million. I mean, if I'm going to give him, I want to tie him up a little longer if I really think he's a piece of the puzzle. So I thought it was a little much for just a 1 year deal. Good for him, though. I think he definitely earned it. I think, and obviously, he's one of the guys who spoke up last year about the lack of accountability. So it's good to see one of those guys back. You know, I mean, Nelson left, but good to see that they brought someone back who definitely had some conviction and some belief this team can be a little better, and it should be better.
All right, I think that's it in terms of re-signings. Anybody else they brought back yet? I don't think so. We're recording here on Thursday morning.
You forgot Daniel Carlson got paid.
Daniel Carlson, yeah. I mean, the
guy's tender, I think, right?
The tender.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, but still, that's a big tender. Second round tender. That's three mil and change. It's pretty good.
Can't lose your kicker. You know, he'll eventually get a long-term deal, I would assume. I mean, he's been reliable for him ever since they picked him up. So, yeah, that's good. But let's take a few questions before we get out of here. I know a lot of the questions are focused on what is next for the Raiders, what else they can still do. And like I said, we're recording here Thursday morning. So by the time you're listening to it, they may have made other moves. But we'll still take a couple questions on this. And I know, you know, the safety position is one that people want to hear a lot about because that's the Raiders haven't addressed it yet. They need help at safety. So Michael C. asks, have you heard anything on the market of Anthony Harris? For the last 3 days, basically, Deshaun's had him as the guy at the top of his list of best fits remaining. Michael wants to know, have we at least reached out to his reps? Any info on Anthony Harris?
I have not heard anything. I've been asking. I've not heard of that name. So my sense is there's such a deep safety market, and they kind of maybe they spent a good deal of money already. They might be going lower on the list, but again, he'd be a great fit. And I've always said that if you can bring in two impact guys, you know, impact defensive players this offseason, I think they got a real chance at some real improvement. And they brought in one with Yannick. So yeah, he's a great player. I just don't know why. It's weird though. He's still in the market. I don't know what's going on, but it is weird to me that he's still out there on day three.
How much do you think Harris would cost?
I would think he'd be like somewhere in that $9 million range. Rayshon Jenkins from the Chargers got like, what, $8 million? And he was not that great last season. I think Harris was probably better than him. And John Johnson got like $11 million. So you would think somewhere between $8 to $11 million. And they can get that if they were to release or restructure Mariota and Carl Nassib and some of the other guys. Like, they can get to that number. So I would think they would do that.
I know they wanted Jenkins. I know they were blown away with that price a little bit. They thought it'd be a little less. That's a guy, a former Bradley guy who they really wanted. Him and Michael Davis, the cornerback, with you guys. And Ingram's other guy, Melvin Ingram. But those are the three guys, I think, as far as former Bradley guys that really jumped out from the Chargers. But those Davis and Jenkins both went for more money than they thought they were going to go for. So so definitely they know they need a safety. They know they have to add one. If not today, then very soon.
And they probably want to add a veteran corner too, right?
I think so. We had that tampering with Richard Sherman and John Gruden on that podcast, on the Chris Collinsworth podcast, and Sherman's still out there. So, I mean, you can definitely see some more one-year deals for a veteran cornerback. I think that's probably a good call.
I think they should sign a nickel. Like, I just don't like the idea of getting a veteran, especially like a Sherman. It might cost some more money outside cornerback, because then you have to put Damon Arnett in the slot, and you really drafted a guy 19th overall to put him at slot corner. You know, there's a ton of slot corners on the market that could be had pretty cheap. So I just think taking that approach and giving Arnett at least a full year to see what he's got. You know, he was beat up for most of last season with various injuries, so we never really got a good look at what kind of player he was. And so you know, I would like to see that duo of Trayvon Mullen and Damon Arnett, especially, you know, since it seems like they're punting until 2022 anyway. You might as well give your young guys some time to show what they got.
All right. Next question here from Jeffrey H. Could you explain the cap versus cash difference? We always hear about cap space, but cash seems to be the most important part of decision making. And I mean, I think, you know, Vic, you mentioned that the cash savings, I think $9.9 million with Rodney Hudson is no small detail in moving on from him. I think the basic difference is, I mean, salary cap is what you're allowed to spend, but the teams that have more cash on hand just have more flexibility. I mean, you look at the way you can structure a contract. If you have a ton of cash available, you can put it a big signing bonus in a deal and then spread that out over all these years. I mean, if you have a bunch of cash, you have more flexibility, I think, to spread out all that cap space, and you can pretty much make anything work if you've got a ton of money.
Yeah, and the Raiders have always denied it, even back to the Oakland days, but they've been kind of short on cash. I mean, I think that's been a commonly held notion around the league. Everyone knows that pretty much, I think. And they came to Vegas, they got the brand new stadium, and then they had no fans last year. So I think cash is still a problem. So I think when you go to Mark Davis and you're like, you say, man, we're gonna get rid of Rodney Hudson. He's like, what? Rodney, I love Rodney Hudson. Like, well, you're going to be able to pocket $9.9 million in cash. Like, all right, that's fine. All right, see you, Rodney. But so I think cash is definitely, they'll say it's not, but it definitely is still a concern for Mark Davis and the Raiders.
All right. Question here from James W. Can you guys talk about what's wrong with the culture? Lack of accountability, lack of investment from Gruden on the D. Is it all the coach's fault, or is there a lack of leadership from key players too? Whatever the root cause, does this get fixed with Gruden leaving, or is this a Mark Davis issue too? That's a meaty question there.
Jesus Christ. yeah, I think anytime you have culture problems, you know, apparently that has to start at the top, you know. And as it stands, you know, John Gruden is running things from a football side, so you have to leave the blame at his doorstep. You know, especially when you talk about guys like Rodney Hudson, like, are we seriously going to, you know, try to blame a culture issue on a guy like him with everything that we know? So, yeah, I think you have to put that on Gruden. And, you know, part of it is just, it seems like, you know, they're really, you know, they were trying to build a team through free agency, and that didn't work out. And that came at the sacrifice of some of the guys that have been on the roster for a long time, and kind of, you know, going into building up the team into what has been in recent years. And You know, some of those guys are very well liked. And so that has reverberations throughout the locker room. And when you have so much turnover and guys that don't really know each other and all these new guys coming in every single year, whether it's through free agency or the draft or trades or whatever it may be, it makes sense, especially when you aren't winning. Like, it'd probably be different if they were had made the playoffs last year and it was feeling a little bit good. But when you have all this turnover and you're losing constantly, changing different cities, like, it makes sense that they would have culture issues.
Yeah, to me, I think turnover is a big deal. I think that's the biggest factor. I think you look at, I mentioned, especially in terms of leadership, like take, for example, Nelson Aguilar. It's a guy who found his voice in the middle of last year, became one of their strongest and most, you know, powerful leaders. And now he's gone. And again, he got, you know, a good deal and that's what he wanted and they couldn't match it. But this is an example of a guy, when you get a guy who emerges as a guy who can finally be a voice and kind of get somebody to follow, a guy who's won a ring, who's shown how you do it the right way to practice and the intensity, and you lose him. So that happens, seems like every year. And then on defense, you know, it's kind of been a mess. I mean, when your defense is that terrible, it's hard to build a good culture. And I think they have young guys who are trying to become leaders, like hopefully Max Crosby can take that jump this year. But it hasn't happened, you know, of late. So you need things to happen as far as guys believing that we can win this year. And if we don't, we're going to be better next year. We're building. And it hasn't been a sense of building because a lot of the blocks get, you know, tossed aside after one season.
I think you look at defensively, it's hard for anybody to be a leader unless you're, you know, out there leading on the field, making plays, doing a ton of things. And I mean, Crosby, you know, had a really good rookie year. He, you know, wasn't as productive in his second year. I mean, you've got to be a guy that's like, you know, dominating at times. And just, you know, if you're not playing well, it's hard to be a leader. And I think that's why they haven't really been able to develop any leaders on defense, because they just don't have anybody that's playing that well.
And losing Hudson on the offensive line, it's going to be a pretty big void in the leadership department too. I mean, you know, Colton Miller doesn't seem like a big rah-rah type of guy. I mean, Hudson wasn't, but he's the type of guy that would keep everybody accountable, even the coaches. I mean, you know, if the coaches didn't get him his blitz reel or whatever, you know, he would get on them. And who's going to take that void now for the offensive line? He kind of kept everything together. So I think that's a worrisome thing to think about when it comes to the offensive line too.
All right. Well, we've come to you 2 weeks in a row to talk about offensive line trades. So hopefully we aren't here back next week talking about a trade of Colton Miller. But I think that's probably pretty safe to assume that won't happen. They can't get rid of the left tackle. So, all right, guys, it's been a busy week. It's been a fun week, and we'll see what other moves the Raiders make here as the first week of free agency, first week of the league year gets underway. And it's been a good show, and we'll talk to you guys again sometime down the road.
See you guys.
Talk to you later.
Adios.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.